This is a song for the generous child. Sing it softly, for the song is wild.
It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have you with us. The 1920s and 30s in the New York City neighborhood of Harlem was home to an explosion of musical and literary creativity. The Harlem Renaissance was a flowering of African-American artists and intellectuals and included such luminaries as Langston Hughes, Fats Waller, Claude McKay, and Zora Neale Hurston. For American soprano Adrienne Danridge, it was such a fertile time to be black in America, she wanted to celebrate it. So she created An Evening in the Harlem Renaissance, in which she hopes to reveal the breadth and depth of the era's artistic accomplishments. There'll be poetry, song, and photo montages presented by Danridge and her accompanist, George Nesich, along with Florentine Opera chorus member Will Johnson and four students from UWM. Danridge, Nesich, and Next Act's producing artistic director David Cesarini join me in the studio now. Adrienne, George, and David, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
An Evening in the Harlem Renaissance. I have to say, Adrienne, it would be a dream come true if I could actually go back in time and be a witness to that, because I have to say Langston Hughes is one of my all-time favorite poets.
Me too.
Yeah. And is that where you started from with
Absolutely.
The idea of doing this show?
Absolutely. A tiny bit of history. I don't want to get too involved in it, but I was commissioned to write a show from Indiana University, Pennsylvania. And the original idea was a show based on Langston Hughes' life completely. And I went through the Langston Hughes estate and I got permission, and then it was rescinded because they actually have someone who has an exclusive right to do a musical about Langston Hughes' life. And unlike most of my live documentaries that I have won so far, the show that I was going to write about Langston Hughes was a more theatrical work where I would have played his mom and his grandmother. And so they already had an exclusive agreement with someone. So since I still had the commission, I decided to just go ahead and broaden the show and make it a lot more in the lecture style live documentary, as I like to call it, as my first show. So An Evening in the Harlem Renaissance was actually the second idea, but Langston Hughes is definitely where I started.
What a great place to start. And it
yes.
was such an amazing time in American cultural history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's 80, 90 years ago now,
yeah.
more or less. It's hard to believe because I still read the work, you know, the music still influences
everything.
You know, everything we do today.
Everything, yeah.
And I think a lot of people probably don't know as much about it as they should. Was one of your goals also to educate people, not just entertain them?
Exactly. So educate, entertain, and enlighten is my whole, the three E's is what I like to apply to any show that I write, because I went to school at Eastman School of Music and I got a bachelor's in music education. I thought I was going to be like a kindergarten teacher. That was like, hi, kids, you know. But my life kind of took its own turn and I still have that teaching instinct. And I just feel like it's great to go to a concert and just get fed by the music. But what a great opportunity to also educate people about the music that they're hearing and what the history, a little bit of the history. So this show, I can only touch on so much, you know, but I really try to touch on the ideas, the main huge ideas that influence these specific songs that I've chosen for the show.
Well, what are some of those ideas that you want people to be sure to come away with?
Well, the idea that in the Harlem Renaissance, part of what the creative people were doing were we were trying to find a black identity. And so a lot of the songs deal with the struggle of being an African American and finding your place in society. Also, we begin the show with the poem by Claude McKay. It's called America. And in that poem, to me, it speaks of everything that African Americans were doing at that time, which is, I'm in this country. I'm viewed as a problem, as W.E.B. Du Bois talks about in The Soul of Souls of Black Folk. I'm a problem, but God, isn't this a great place to be? Like, there's this crazy double consciousness where I'm treated as a problem, yet I'm still loving my life as a creative artist. I'm getting to express myself. And I feel like a lot of the artists lived inside of their art to escape what was going on out in the outside world. Langston Hughes, we have so many songs with text by Langston Hughes. Litany is one. Gather up in the arms of your pity, the sick, the depraved, the desperate, the tired, all the scum of our weary city, gather up in the arms of your pity. Gather up in the arms of your love, those who expect no love. I mean, just beautiful. I mean, those, don't they give you a shiver?
It does.
You know?
Yeah, it absolutely does.
Really, really, really powerful stuff. And then I actually commissioned Drew Heminger, he's a New York-based composer, to set six poems that spoke to me by Langston Hughes. One of them is Casual, Weary Blues, of course, which is,
you have to.
It's like, you know, mandatory, although it is 5.5 minutes long, but it's really cool. And then also Genius Child. This is a song for the genius child. Sing it softly, for the song is wild. You know that one. And then we do Negro Speaks of Rivers. And I love that one because Langston Hughes wrote that on the back of a napkin as he was traveling on the train. He was going to go visit his daddy. He was living in Mexico. And he was going through my hometown, which is St. Louis, Missouri, and looking at the Mississippi River, he wrote the Negro Speaks of Rivers.
So there's a great connection, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew I loved him since I was in high school. You know, I wrote my first, you couldn't call it a show, it's for my church's homecoming when I was 14 or 15. And I used his What Happens to a Dream Deferred as the beginning of that show, if you want to call it that. I was like 15 and I was like talking about my life. Who has a life at by 15?
Well, you think you do. We all thought we did.
I thought I was special too. but yeah, so Langston Hughes is really, he's the backbone of the show. Like basically almost the first half is all Langston Hughes. And then also a cool little song that we do is by the European composer Alexander Zemlinsky, who was the first European composer to set Langston Hughes' works.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in, and I do it in German. Spielt die Blues für mich. You know?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Europeans, let's bring George in on this conversation as well, because you two have worked together quite a bit, right?
Yes, that is true. Almost 15 years, I think. Yes.
And so how have you been part of the creation of this show? Because I'm sure you are an integral part of it.
I guess the answer is that Adrian and I collaborated on the other show that she had written, which some of your audiences may have seen in Milwaukee at the same place, at the Next Act Theater. And we've been working together for so long, and it's wonderful to see our relationship progress from kind of more scholastic projects that we had to do when we were in school to really fully artistic ones where Adrian is really fully able to use her artistic freedom and create the works of art that she enjoys working on the most and bring them to such success.
Now, when you were growing up and studying music, had you heard of the Harlem Renaissance in Belgrade?
Yes, very much so. You're probably aware that there was a time in this country when some of these artists, for example, my mother always used to listen to the recordings of Paul Robeson, the wonderful singer, actor, sportsman, lawyer. I mean, a true Renaissance man. And she would say, this is an idol for anybody. This should be a role model for anybody in the world. And he was, at that time, Paul Robeson was suffering from being estranged from his homeland for some of his political, alleged political beliefs. And so he found a great success in Eastern Europe, in Russia and in Yugoslavia and other countries as a touring singer, singing spirituals and introducing us, Eastern Europeans, to the spirituals. So yes, I was familiar with it.
That's great that it actually has made it across the ocean, not just to Paris, where you think that was a kind of a common
place. Very common, yeah, because they had their own Renaissance, too.
They sure did, and a lot of African-American performers went there
including the 20s. Including Langston Hughes.
Including Langston Hughes, because it was a safe place to go and a welcoming place to go.
Yes.
But so great that, you know, that much farther
definitely
away.
Made an impact. And I have to say, going to school back in Eastern Europe, it always felt like the art of Africans and African Americans was presented to us in a more even way than it frequently is here, unfortunately, as a part of the culture as a whole, as a part of a separate event in history.
Yeah, that does tend to happen here, as the history is segregated as well as the peoples.
Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely. I find it quite interesting. And one of my big goals, if I was like a millionaire, or billionaire, or whatever, I would love to be able to influence politics in this way, that I would like to take away the labels. I would like to take away African-American. I know there are reasons for it. I am not, like, you know, I don't live in this, like, disconnected utopia where I don't think it has to. It kind of has to exist for certain reasons. But I feel like as long as there is a label before the word American, when you refer to me, I will never be truly American.
So, David, bringing you in on this as well, these kind of shows, you know, Adrienne, you've already brought her here once before. How does this work to the mission of Next Act?
It's actually helping me to expand my mission, to bring music onto my stage, into my space, in a relatively affordable way, because, you know, musicals are three people in the cast, but there are four in the band, so it's still a seven-person show. But it gives my audience something different, something new along the education and enlighten track. Of course, that's exactly what I'd like to do. That fits perfectly with my mission. And yet it brings something of black culture and accomplishments, particularly artistically and historically. It brings that to the fore. And it allows us to try to reach out to a black audience here in Milwaukee. We're going to Calvary Baptist Church Sunday and Tuesday for a couple of appearances, and hopefully we'll attract people from that area, from that organization and network to come on in, because it's tricky. Next Act is viewed, I think, outside of what interests the African American culture here, and this is a way to bridge that.
Right, and we're getting into that whole, you know, labeling issue mm-hmm. again. And one of the things that I love about how you've set this show up, Adrienne, is that, yes, you have the poetry of Langston Hughes and you have other, you know, African-American writers and composers, but you also have George Gershwin. You also have Kurt Weill. Mm-hmm. You have
very
Zelensky.
Important. Mm-hmm.
Very important, because they all worked in and out of that. It was a very fluid time in that part of New York, you know, above 125th
Street. They went to the same parties.
They all knew each other. They were all sharing music. They were all, you know, sharing food, mm-hmm. you know, alcohol, whatever it was they were doing, they were all hanging out. Mm-hmm. And it was a time when we think of in this country as a very segregated and very polarized time with race relations, where at least there, those barriers weren't there.
And you start to, you know, I think about the music as well, start to be integrated and having the words of African-Americans being set by white composers, but then also having African-American composers composing in the European style of composition. And the last portion of the program are spirituals. And this whole idea was really made prominent by Harry T. Burley, who was a student of Dvorak, actually. And what he did was Burley has a gazillion spirituals that he arranged, but he used European techniques using this simple, very, very simple melody of a spiritual, but then he composed around that. The piano parts are usually really, really beautiful.
I am very, very much looking forward to hearing it and seeing you on stage. And I can't thank you enough for stopping in today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Soprano Adrienne Danrich, who has a significant operatic and concert career, created and stars in An Evening in the Harlem Renaissance at Next Act Theater. George Nesich is her accompanist, and David Cesarini is Next Act's producing artistic director. An Evening in the Harlem Renaissance opens Thursday evening and runs only through the weekend. There's more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And we're out of time today. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM-FM and HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.